This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Patriot Preacher, covering the news from a Christian perspective. Welcome to the program, everybody. Great to be with you. It is Monday, and you can tell it's Monday. Struggling a little bit with my words here, but we should be able to get through it.
I'm still trying to figure out what words you struggle with.
Well, that's the thing. I'm still working on that as well. But nonetheless, we will be covering the story. Now, I want to give you a little bit of perspective on this, because this is something that's not made the news much. I've seen it reported on a handful of the conservative sites. Haven't seen any of the mainstream media or any of the liberal media, the HuffPo or any of that cover. I'm not saying they didn't. I'm saying that I didn't see their coverage of it if they did. But either way, it's not being covered nearly as much as the James Comey testimony. This was actually happening while we were covering the Comey testimony live. Now, I give no excuses for the media not covering it in retrospect, but I understand why this was not covered live or given the prudence and the significance that the James Comey testimony was, because, let's be honest, nobody could have predicted this. So what happened is that while we were all occupied with the James Comey testimony, there was a Senate hearing for a man named Russell Voigt to become the deputy budget director within the White House. And during this confirmation hearing, he received questions from senators, like all people do in their confirmation hearings. And one of the senators that questioned him was Bernie Sanders. Now, I'm going to play the clip here for you in a second, which lasts about 3 minutes. But I want to preface it before we start by saying this. I give Bernie an awful lot of leeway. And people are surprised by that, because Bernie Sanders is about as far the opposite of me on the political spectrum as could be imagined. He is a big government authoritarian liberal. Me being a small government conservative libertarian, that's about as far away as you can get from me. But the reason that I give Bernie an awful lot of wiggle room is because I do think he's a kook, but at least I think he's an honest kook. I think he is what he is. He doesn't try to hide his ideology like I believe a lot of politicians do. And, you know, love him or hate him, he is out there in the open and tells you exactly what he thinks. And by the way, this does not change that. But I do think he's wrong, and that's why I'm going to kind of break down what he's saying here. So let's go ahead and listen to this clip. This is from Thursday, Bernie Sanders questioning Russell Voigt's confirmation. Clip one.
Their letter states, and I quote, "We write to express our deep concerns about the nomination of Russell Voigt to the position of Deputy Director of the White House Office of Management and Budget. Mr. Voigt has denigrated American Muslims and the Muslim faith. His writings demonstrate a clear hostility to religious pluralism and freedom that disqualify him for any appointment, including that of Deputy Director."
All right, pause it right there, Joe.
In the piece that I referred to that you wrote for Republic.
All right, so what we're hearing right there is he said that it shows open hostility towards religious pluralism. Now, we're going to get into why he's saying that, but I want to, before we get started on all that, explain it by saying this. I looked up several different definitions of religious pluralism, and like most words, there's a variety of definitions, but the vast majority of them revolved around at least the idea that all religions are equally valid. So in other words, what he's saying is, if you're a Christian, you believe that Christianity is good, but being a Muslim is just as good, being a Jew is just as good. If you're a Muslim, you believe the same thing about Christians and Jews and Hindus and Buddhists and Jedi Knights and whatever other religions you may possess. So that's what religious pluralism is. He's saying that Russell Voigt shows an open hostility to religious pluralism, which would be virtually every religion in the world shows they would consider that a heresy, to say that their religion is right, but all the other religions are also right. So there's a big problem there, because not only would most of the world's religions reject religious pluralism, but for that matter, so would logic. Because the whole point of there being different religions is that they don't agree on some things. And what religious pluralism says is all religions are equally right even when they contradict each other, which from a logical standpoint can't even be true. when you have two statements that are in contradiction to each other, they could theoretically both be wrong, but they can't both be true at the same time. One's got to be right and one's got to be wrong, or they can both be wrong, but they can't both be right. So not only logic and virtually every world religion would disagree with the idea of religious pluralism. So that being said, let's move along and see what Bernie's beef is with this guy.
So, for the record, in the piece that I referred to that you wrote for a publication called Resurgent, you wrote, Muslims do not simply have a deficient theology. They do not know God because they have rejected Jesus Christ, his son, and they stand condemned. End of quote. Do you believe that that statement is Islamophobic?
Absolutely not, Senator. I'm a Christian, and I believe in a Christian set of principles based on my faith. That post, as I stated in the questionnaire to this committee, was to defend my alma mater, Wheaton College, a Christian school that has a statement of faith that includes the centrality of Jesus Christ for salvation. And
again, I apologize. Forgive me. We just don't have a lot of time. Do you believe that people in the Muslim religion stand condemned? Is that your view?
Again, Senator, I'm a Christian, and I wrote that piece.
Well, what does that say?
The statement of faith of Wheaton
College. I understand that. I don't know how many Muslims there are in America. I really don't know. Probably a couple of million. Are you suggesting that all of those people stand condemned? What about Jews? They stand condemned too?
Senator, I'm a Christian.
I understand you are a Christian, but this country is made up of people who are not just. I understand that Christianity is the majority religion, but there are other people who have different religions in this country and around the world. In your judgment, do you think that people who are not Christians are going to be condemned?
Thank you for probing on that question. As a Christian, I believe that all individuals are made in the image of God and are worthy of dignity and respect regardless of their religious beliefs. I believe that as a Christian, that's how I should treat all individuals.
And do you think your statement that you put into that publication, they do not know God because they've rejected Jesus Christ the Son and they stand condemned, do you think that's respectful of other religions?
Senator, I wrote a post based on being a Christian and attending a Christian school that has a statement of faith that speaks clearly with regard to the centrality of Jesus Christ in salvation.
I would simply say, Mr. Chairman, that this nominee is really not someone who is what this country is supposed to be about. I will vote no.
Okay. So there's Bernie's little tirade. He kind of loses it there after the third time he responds with, I'm a Christian, and tries to restart his answer there. But it's interesting to me that Bernie's big beef seems to be that this belief is, according to his own words, not respectful of other religions. Well, has he never heard of a respectful disagreement, that you can disagree with someone respectfully? I mean, I disagree with most religions as far as even within the Christian. There's Christians that I disagree with on religious matters. But that doesn't mean I don't disagree respectfully with them. That doesn't mean that I am in some way showing hatred towards them because I happen to disagree with them and think that they're wrong. You can disagree with someone, both in the political realm and on the religious realm, respectfully, and even believe that it is a salvation issue, and not hate that person. In fact, that's what we're commanded to do by the scripture, which, by the way, when we come back from this break, I will get into that a little bit. But another thing that I thought was interesting and somewhat telling of Bernie's problems with this guy is he says, I understand that Christian is the majority religion. Well, that has nothing to do with whether or not this guy believes that Christianity is correct or not. Muslims are the majority religion and they still believe they're correct, which, I mean, if they didn't believe they were right, they'd be crazy people for believing it and still thinking they were wrong. Same thing with the Jews. The Jews aren't the majority, but they still think that they're right and the Christians are wrong, which is, I mean, fine, I would disagree with them on that, obviously. But being the majority has nothing to do with believing that your religion is correct. You could be the one guy that has that religion and still believe your religion's correct and not have a single other follower and still believe that everybody else is wrong. That has nothing to do with your religious beliefs. So we are going to get into the scripture about this, take a look at some of the things and the claims that Bernie's staking. When we come back, 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to call in.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Governments could not give the rights essential to happiness. We claim them from a higher source, from the King of Kings and the Lord of all the earth, General John Dickinson, signer of the Constitution.
Welcome back. You are listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to call in and weigh in on what we're talking about here with Bernie Sanders and the confirmation of Russell Voigt. Now, before we do get back into that, I wanted to mention that if your dad won $4,000 to upgrade his favorite spot at home, where would it be? Just think about that for a second. Would he buy a huge TV and upgrade that basement man cave? Would he buy the biggest grill ever out on the deck? Would he upgrade his lawn care equipment? Whatever it may be, you can enter to win $4,000 for your dad at NewsRadio1440.com and give your dad the best Father's Day ever. So be sure to check that out. We've got the, the top pop contest. I like that.
That's good.
Reminds me of my Dr. Seuss days.
I wonder if my my son in Pennsylvania would be eligible. Probably not.
No family members of the station staff would be.
Kind of a family member. But
yeah, a little bit.
Doesn't claim me, but.
My dad's still upset that he can't win biscuit tickets up here now because I'm an employee. But anyway, also wanted to mention the Sounds of Summer continue at the Shops of East Chase this Thursday with a national recording artist, Lost Five. Bring their signature sound from California to the Sounds of Summer stage at 7 o'clock. This event is free to attend and includes kids' activities like face painting, balloon artist, and a bouncy house. Vendors on site include Blackfin Ameripub, Dothan Ice Cream, That's My Dog, and Alabama Sweet Tea. And you can register to win a $50 East Chase gift card right there. So, hotel accommodations provided by Staybridge Suites Montgomery. Book your stay at sbhotelmontgomery.com. All right. Now, let's get back to what we're talking about, because as you'll recall, and we won't play the clip again, but Bernie Sanders essentially takes issue with the fact that this guy, Russell Voigt, says that Christianity is the only path to salvation and that Muslims are lost because they do not know God, because they do not know Jesus Christ or acknowledge him as his son. Pretty standard, normal basics of Christianity. And to go along with my point here, I'm going to read us a few verses. Let's go to Paul, the one of the apostles of Jesus Christ, in Romans 12, 17 through 19. Never pay back evil for evil to anyone. Respect what is right in the sight of all men. If possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. Never take your own revenge, beloved, but leave room for the wrath of God, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. All right, so this is the Apostle Paul saying, if it's at all possible with you, with everything that you can do, be respectful, try to be at peace with everybody, and don't take vengeance into your own hands because that's God's territory. So you leave that stuff to him. You don't worry about your enemies. You treat them with kindness. You treat them with respect. You represent Christ and be at peace with them as much as humanly possible. You don't repay evil for evil. Now, let's look at 2 Thessalonians, and it looks like this is verse 5 through 10. This is a plain indication of God's righteous judgment, so that you will be considered worthy of the kingdom of God, for which indeed you are suffering. For after all, it is only just for God to repay with affliction those who afflict you, and give relief to those who are afflicted, and to us as well, when the Lord Jesus Christ will be revealed from heaven with his mighty angels in flaming fire, dealing out retribution to those who do not know God and those who do not obey the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. These will pay the penalty of eternal destruction away from the presence of the Lord and from the glory of his power, when he comes to be glorified in his saints on that day and to be marveled at among all who have believed, for our testimony to you was believed. All right, that's pretty plain and simple. not a whole lot of wiggle room left there by Paul. He says that anyone that does not believe in the gospel of Jesus Christ will meet a fiery eternal destruction. There's not a lot of speculation or room left to interpret about what that's going to be like.
Gray area.
Yeah, no gray areas when Paul
not.
Is...
Yeah, it's not.
No, I was agreeing with you. No gray areas when it comes to that. If you either believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, or you will spend eternity in a fiery destruction, which will be carried out by God's angels, is what he's saying right here, that there will be a recompense to pay. And so he's using fiery language in a very literal way. But this is a condemnation of those who do not obey the gospel. This is the common orthodox Christian teaching. I don't know of a single Christian denomination that believes that there is another path to go to salvation without Jesus Christ. Maybe out there, I'm just not aware of it. But my point is, the vast, vast, vast majority of Christians, and any Christians that believe correctly what the Bible teaches, believe that if you do not obey the gospel of Christ, you are not going to be saved. You will stand condemned. And that's not Russell Voigt saying it. That's not Caleb Colquitt saying it. That's the Apostle Paul saying it. So keep in mind that this is the same Apostle Paul writing to the Thessalonians that also wrote the passage that we just read from Romans. Well, how is that possible? He's saying be respectful of people and be at peace with them if at all possible, but then in the next verse says that God's going to deal out an eternal destruction for them. See, these things are not incompatible. You can be kind, respectful, loving, in fact, that's what we're commanded to be as Christians, and simultaneously believe that that person's soul is lost. In fact, I would argue, and have scripture to back this up, that the most compassionate pathway to take if someone is lost is to tell them that they're wrong. I mean, I guess if a person has a truck speeding towards them, you could just stand there and let them get hit, but I believe the more compassionate thing would be to yell out to them, hey, there's a truck coming, you might want to move. So this is something that I think that Bernie's having a real struggle with understanding. Him not being real religious himself, he's Jewish, but he doesn't really practice anything, and that's according to him, not to me. I'm not trying to bash the guy's religion. I'm just saying he's not a terribly religious person. He's more of a secularist. So I think that's one of the reasons that he's either completely ignorant of the teachings of Christianity or just doesn't know any of them, because the Jews essentially believe that their path is the only way to salvation as well. At any rate, we will be back in just a moment and dig a little deeper into this.
No such person, no such zone. This time I'm gonna...
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
John 8:31 and 32. So Jesus was saying to those Jews who had believed him, if you continue in my word, then you are truly disciples of mine, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free.
Welcome back. You are listening to the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. Real quick, we did have something come up on Facebook, which I wanted to bring up before we get back into our subject matter. Tom from Greenville, our friend who's called in here quite a few times, has mentioned, because I was talking to him on the Patriot Preacher's Facebook page the other day, about how the upcoming Senate race to fulfill Luther Strange's current Senate seat. And one of the things he asked about is the different candidates, where I was leaning on that, and he talked about he likes Mo Brooks, and I said, I like Mo Brooks, but I've called him two or three times, and he has yet to respond to my request to have him on the show, and that is giving me a little bit of pause. And he asked if it would be okay to write an email to Brooks and ask him to come on the show and ask if that would be all right. Yes, that's absolutely all right. If any of you are listening to me, and not just Mo Brooks, because I'm trying to get all the candidates. It looks like I've already got Roy Moore and Dr. Randy Brinson lined up. So I should be
good with Moore. Excellent.
Yeah. So I should be good with those two. But if any of the other candidates you want on, let me know. Drop me a line. And I am trying to get Mo Brooks, and I'm trying to get Luther Strange on as well. But yeah, anytime you want a public official on the show, especially if I've already extended them an open invitation, which I have to the candidates that will be running for the Senate seat, by all means, get in touch with them, let them know about me, and let them know that you as a constituent would like to hear what they have to say. So thanks, Tom from Greenville. Anybody else wants to jump in on that, talk to Mo Brooks, that would be much appreciated. All right. Now, let's go back to what we were talking about with Bernie. We mentioned that the Apostle Paul was talking about you can respect people, love people, but also disagree with them and believe that they are in spiritual danger. And so he completely rejects the idea that Bernie's talking about here, religious pluralism, saying that all religions are essentially the same, there's not one that's any better than the other, and that if you believe that Christianity is the only way to salvation, then somehow you're not only unfit for office, but you're also hateful and bigoted and not being respectful. All right. So let's go to – let's not even look at one of the apostles. Let's go straight to the words of Jesus Christ himself. Let's look in John 14:6. Jesus said to him, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. Well, I don't know how you can say it any more succinctly than that. He says, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. Notice anything about that? All three of those are singular. He's not saying I'm a way, I'm a truth, I'm a life. He's saying, if you don't have me, you don't have the way, you don't have the truth, you don't have the life. And then he even goes further and summarizes it, nobody comes to the Father but by me. In other words, if you don't come through me, then you do not know God. Which, by the way, is exactly what Russell Voigt said in his piece in The Resurgent, which Bernie Sanders is questioning. So he's saying right there, if you're not coming to the Father through me, then you ain't getting to the Father. That's just how it is. There's only one pathway, and it's Jesus Christ. That is straight out of the mouth of Jesus Christ himself. Let's also go to John 10:1-3. Jesus talking again here. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter by the door into the fold of the sheep, but climbs up some other way, he is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. Let's skip down to verse 7, John 10:7-10. So Jesus said to them again, truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who come before me, talking about his contemporaries that had claimed to be saviors before him, all who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. If anyone enters through me, he will be saved, and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and to kill and to destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. All right, so when we're talking about religious exclusivity, this is about as exclusive as it gets. Jesus is saying, you have to come through me to get to the Father, and anyone who tries to get to salvation another way is a thief and a robber. That's a pretty strong condemnation coming straight from the mouth of God in the flesh. He's saying that anybody else, any other way that you attempt to get to, if you're doing that, you're a thief and a robber. There's only one way into the pasture, and it's through the door, and I'm the door. So Jesus is pretty explicit about that. And then he's also saying that not only is everyone else that comes through as a thief and a robber, but all those who are claiming a different gospel, they are thieves and robbers. They are misleading people. They are not to be trusted. So according to Jesus, anyone who's preaching a doctrine different than his, which by the way would include the tenets of Islam, would be a thief and a robber. Now, I'm sorry if that offends you, but that's right out of Jesus Christ's mouth, and this is the point that I wanted to make. There is no middle ground with Jesus. There's not a gray area there. And this is one of the things that I am always, I wouldn't even say frustrated by, but certainly concerned about, just from nothing else, from a logical standpoint, concerning people who try to say, well, you know, this Jesus, he was a good guy, but he wasn't the Son of God. And well, how can you say he was a good guy if he's not the Son of God and he doesn't have the way to salvation? That would make him a liar who deceived people and has led millions astray over several centuries. So you only have really three paths, so far as I can tell, with Jesus. Either he was God incarnate, the Son of God, and the only path to salvation, exactly what he said he was, or he's a lunatic, or he's a liar. There's really not another option. He either intentionally misled people, he was just a crazy person that really thought he was God but wasn't correct, or he was the savior of the world. If he's anything less than what he was claiming to be, then nothing he said can be taken as good or decent. Because he was misleading people. So there's no fence riding with Christ. You're either on one side or the other. And that's one thing that Bernie seems to not really understand here when he's talking about this. Because here's the issue. Bernie's problem is not with Russell Voigt. His problem is with the teachings of Jesus Christ himself. If Bernie's problem is you can't say that Muslims are lost because they don't know Jesus, well, then his problem isn't with Russell Voigt. His problem is with the words straight out of Jesus Christ's mouth. And that's the issue that we have here, is that Bernie doesn't even seem to grasp that. So if this is Bernie's litmus test, and this is the logical, if you follow Bernie's logic to its conclusion, this is where you get. If this is Bernie's litmus test, then not a single follower of Jesus Christ will ever be able to hold public office. Because if you believe in the words of Christ and that his words are infallible and the words contained within the gospel are his message, then that means that you also believe the passages we just read out of John, and thus you are unfit to hold public office. So if we're going by Bernie Sanders' standards from here on out, no Christian can ever be in any kind of public office whatsoever. And also, I might add, that by that logic, neither could Jews or Muslims. Because Jews and Muslims also have an exclusive claim to the path of salvation. Jews
pretty
claim
much
that,
takes, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, pretty much takes care of all presidents.
Yeah, all 45 of them. That would be every single one.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have this problem that we're running into, is that Bernie doesn't even seem to grasp this, but if we're going by his standard, because Muslims believe that Jews and Christians are infidels. Now, obviously, I think they're wrong on that, but that's what their doctrine teaches. And if they disbelieved their doctrine, they wouldn't be very good Muslims. Same thing with the Jews. The Jews believe that Jesus Christ was not the Son of God, that he claimed things that were not true. And thus, if you are believing in the teachings of Christ or believing in the teachings of Muhammad, then you are in a you are creating enmity between you and the teachings of the Torah and God. Same thing with pagans or Hindus or whatever else you can imagine. The point is, this whole religious pluralism thing, it's not just the Christians that are against it, it's everybody. There are very, very few religions that openly state, well, our religion is a good religion, but there's other religions that are just as good out there. I mean, there's a lot of newfangled religions out there. I really don't know. There's probably at least a couple that claim that. But the point is, the vast majority of the world's religions all claim that they have the exclusive pathway to God and the exclusive pathway to salvation. So if this is Bernie Sanders' test, not only does that exclude all Christians, but it also excludes all Jews, all Muslims, pretty much anybody that's religious from ever holding public office, which I realize in the mind of a Marxist like Sanders would probably be a dream come true, but that's not the way this country works. You see, I think that honestly, I think that Bernie is an honest man. I still believe that. I said that at the opening of this discussion. I think he's one of the very few honest Democrats. And I like that about him because it sometimes gives us a window into the way the Democrat mind works. However, in a way, I think that makes this even more disturbing because I think that there are at least some Democrats out there that probably think the way Bernie does, who would really just rather religious people not hold office. And that's going to be problematic. Just to back that statement up, we'll come back to that in just a second.
Well, I didn't go to work, told the boss I was sick.
Now you can't use a car because you didn't work a lick.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
We all agree in the obligation of the moral principles of Jesus, and nowhere will they be found delivered in greater purity than in his discourses. Thomas Jefferson.
Welcome back. You are listening to the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in. We're still talking about Bernie Sanders and his beef with Russell Voigt and him believing that Christians, like most Christians, believe that Jesus Christ is the only way to salvation, and those who do not believe he's the Son of God cannot possibly be saved. So I wanted to talk about, because there's been a little bit of response to this, and this is the advantage of doing the story over the weekend, is there were lots of chances for people to respond. Senator Chris Van Hollen, a Democrat from Maryland, defended Sanders in this. He said, "I don't think anybody was questioning anybody's faith." Well, I really don't know how you can interpret it any other way. He was asking questions about what the man's religious beliefs were. But, you know, that's just me. I don't see how anyone could interpret it as not questioning his faith. But all right. But let's look at why, because I think that's always important to ask why this is taking place. I think a lot of the reason that, and Bernie kind of epitomizes this, and I'm using him as a summary of it, it's because a lot of Democrats do not understand the ability to separate a moral belief from policymaking and governance. So a great example of this would be that Democrats traditionally have been big proponents of sin taxes, regulating nutrition, redistribution of wealth, greater controls on parenting, things like that. So in other words, to a Democrat, if you believe that something is moral and right, then you ought to reflect that in your policymaking. And if you believe something is wrong, there should be a policy that comes about to discourage or make illegal that behavior, whatever it may be. And we can see this in the way that they make policy. Like I said, they try to disencourage smoking, for example, by taxing you for smoking. They try to discourage you from eating too much by regulating how much salt you can have at the table or the size of the Coke that you can drink. In the more liberal cities, this is something that's a pretty common practice. And so they have a hard time separating in their mind whether you believe something morally and whether that will affect your policy making. For example, but you can separate them. And for example, with me, and most Christians would believe this, I believe that drunkards, homosexuals, and adulterers will also not be saved. That comes straight out of 1 Corinthians 6:9. And if I were to use that verse as an excuse to somehow discriminate against drunkards, homosexuals, and adulterers, for example, let's say I work at the DMV and I'm handing out driver's licenses, and I look at this lady as like, "Oh, you had an affair. Yeah, you don't get a driver's license." See, that would be wrong, because I would be misapplying something based on a religious belief, which, by the way, isn't there. However, so if I'm persecuting someone because I believe that they're in error regardless of what the law says, well, yeah, that's a problem. But the thing is, Russell Voigt has no record in public life of ever having done that. But Bernie Sanders is applying that because he thinks if something's moral, that should be what you do in policymaking, and that's not something that the vast majority of Christians believe. Bernie Sanders doesn't seem to understand that, and I think that disconnect between what most conservative, small government-minded people and the large government progressive branch like Bernie Sanders is, that's a disconnect between a set of fundamental beliefs, and that's why this is happening. Sanders actually doubled down and tried to justify his behavior through a spokesperson who reached out to the media. He said, "In a democratic society founded on the principle of religious freedom, we can all disagree of their faith. We can all disagree over issues, but racism and bigotry, condemning an entire group of people because of their faith, cannot be a part of any public policy." Well, that's the problem. Voigt never said that this was going to have anything to do with public policy. In fact, the hundreds of thousands of Christians that have served in different governing capacities, not only in America but in other places, don't necessarily believe that because the Bible says something is a sin, it ought to be prosecuted. Obviously, there have been some that did over the past, but Voigt has no record of doing so. And I wanted to point this out, too. He brought in race, oddly enough. When at any point in this discussion was there ever a mention of race? Contrary to Sanders' belief, Muslim is not a race. Muslim is a religious belief. Christian is not a race. Muslim is not a race. Hindu is not a race. Now, you may have more of one particular race involved in a particular religion, but that's not the same thing. So there's this confusion here, and it seems that they're going to the old Democrat playbook, which is always make everything about race, even though race was never mentioned. So I wanted to bring up one other thing before we, because we're running out of time here. Not only is all of this completely illogical and not consistent with the teachings of the gospel, but on top of that, it's blatantly unconstitutional as well. Let's go to Article 6 of the Constitution. This is in the third paragraph, about halfway down. And it says, "No religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States." Ergo, and Bernie said that he's going to vote no based on this. This is exactly what this particular clause in the Constitution was written to protect us from. That you have a test of your religious beliefs to determine whether or not you are fit to hold public office. So if this is the case, and granted, Bernie Sanders probably has a lot of legitimate political disagreements with Voigt that he could have voted no on based upon that. However, if Bernie votes no based on the man's religious beliefs, Bernie Sanders is going against his own oath of office to uphold the Constitution. I'm sorry, but that's, I mean, it's plain and black and white that if he does this, he is in violation of the Constitution, which he swore to uphold as a senator. Now, the Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen of Maryland said that, "I don't think anyone's questioning anybody's faith here," but that's exactly what was going on. Don't have much time, but it looks like we do have a caller, and I haven't taken one yet, so let's go to Joel on line one. Good morning, Joel.
Good morning.
Hey, what's on your mind?
Well, I think the difference on this situation is, and first off, I happen to be Jewish, and whether you believe in my salvation or not, it really doesn't hurt my feelings or anything.
Right, but, same with
but
me.
But the issue on this with Bernie Sanders is the Muslims seem to have some belief that all people are people if they're part of their own faith, and Christianity doesn't look at it from that perspective. Christianity has always had the, or in my opinion, you can tell me if I'm wrong, a person is a person is a person whether they believe in Jesus Christ or not.
Amen.
They're still a human being, and they're still supposed to be treated with respect, and you act accordingly. You don't discriminate. You don't this, that, and other. And that's the problem with this Bernie Sanders folks.
Yeah.
On this issue. If the man were a Muslim, he would be fighting tooth and nail to get him confirmed and vote him in and everything else. But and it's the same thing with Roy Moore, because Roy Moore
I agree, Joel, but I've got like 10 seconds, so I got to let you go. I'm sorry. I'm up against a hard break. I apologize. But yeah, I agree with Joel 100%. If this guy were a Muslim and believed exactly the same thing, Bernie would probably be pushing for him. We'll be right back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
What's up, preacher man?
The fallout from James Comey's testimony. We go there now on The Patriot Preacher. Welcome in, everyone. Hour 2 of The Patriot Preacher is on right now. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to get in. But before we go to the phones, I did want to bring this up because I thought this was important to talk about. Because what we did was, because the Comey testimony was happening live and we were covering it, I didn't really have much of a chance to comment on it unless, of course, you were following me on Twitter. And which, by the way, you should do. At Patriot Preach. But anyway. And then, of course, Friday we had the Alabama FFA convention coverage, which means that I haven't really given a response, which actually I think works in our favor, and here's why. everybody's still talking about the James Comey hearing, but now we have the media's reaction to it. And I just wanted to give a little commentary on that, if nothing else. I sat around and I had an almost familiar feeling watching all the media backlash after James Comey's testimony on Thursday, because there was all this buildup, all this hype. The Democrats, the vast majority of the media, were sure they had Trump dead to rights. This was going to end his presidency, and he would basically be impeached before the day was over, it seemed like, based on the way that they pumped it. All the major news networks had countdowns to it. They were convinced that this was going to be the biggest deal of the year. And then it wound up really not being all that significant. We really didn't learn a whole lot from it. And I was trying to think, where have I felt this feeling before, seeing this kind of reaction? And I pinned it down. It was the 2007 National College Football Championship. Now, I know you're thinking, where is he going with this? Yeah. Joe affirming that, saying, yeah. You remember in 2007, it was, and this was before there was a big SEC domination going on. The SEC was, of course, a good football conference, but they were nowhere near considered the greatest football conference, as a lot of people consider them now. So what happened is there was this big setup. Florida and Ohio State were going to play each other for the championship. Michigan had been number two, but you know how those polls work, and they didn't even win their conference, so they kind of phased Michigan out, didn't want a rematch between them and Ohio State, so it was going to be Ohio State and Florida, which nobody took seriously because Florida had one loss, Ohio State had a perfect season. Of course, that one Florida loss being to my own Auburn Tigers, War Eagle, but let's not get off into the weeds here for a moment. What happened is all the commentators, there was the big lead up to it, all the hype, and they said, yeah, the truth is Florida does not stand a chance. Ohio State's going to embarrass Florida. It's not even going to be close. They won't even be able to stay on the field with them. I remember hearing countless sports commentators say this over and over and over and over again on ESPN, Fox Sports. All the big money was going towards Ohio State. And then what happened is, even though everyone was thoroughly convinced that at Ohio State it was basically a foregone conclusion that they were just going to beat Florida State harshly, Florida came out on the field and embarrassed Ohio State. It wasn't even close. Their defenders were way too fast for Ohio State. They completely shut down their offense. Granted, Ohio State had the early lead, but it was on a return for a, you know, it was just a return in the first play of the game. But they only scored one other time the entire rest of the game. Florida completely shut them down. Tim Tebow was destroying their defense. And Florida or Ohio State and the commentators that supported them wound up looking pretty foolish. They just sat there with an egg on their face. They couldn't believe what had just happened. That's pretty much what happened at the James Comey testimony. Because the media, and I think that they severely overplayed their hand. Both the media and the Democrats had made it up in their own mind that this was going to be the thing that got Trump. This is going to bring him down. This is essentially going to be the end of his presidency. Even if he stays in office, he won't be able to get anything done after this. And James Comey comes out and testifies, and we really didn't learn much of anything that we didn't already know, or at least had a pretty good idea of, and maybe James Comey confirmed it, but there was really not any new information that came out of the testimony. And so then you watched all the Democrats and the media just kind of scrambling, trying to figure out how they're going to justify making such a huge deal out of this when it wound up being, for the most part, a giant nothing burger. And it was funny to watch them try to explain themselves. But one thing that I thought was interesting in all this is during all the buildup, the media did everything at every single turn to remind you of Watergate at every possible situation. And even though I've been greatly a CNN defender, and I still think they're probably the closest thing to a balanced news network that we've got, they still lean pretty hardcore left during most of their day programming, and especially in their morning programming. And they came out, and you notice that they had Bernstein on practically every panel where they talked about this, of course, being the reporter that broke Watergate. And then they also had this other Dean guy who was the chief witness in the Watergate scandal, who has been thoroughly discredited since then, even spent some time in prison. But that really wasn't about them offering their expertise. That was about, we're going to try to remind people of Watergate at every instance that we can. Now, whether it was intentional or whether the media had just made up their mind that Trump was already guilty and this was already a Watergate-level scandal and thus acted accordingly to that, I really don't know. I can't read their mind. But the point is, they went out of their way to connect this to Watergate as much as they possibly could, and they find out this testimony is really nothing like those 17 minutes of tape that broke, proving that Richard Nixon had done what he did. And this is why trash-talking is pretty much never a good idea before the event ever actually happens. Same thing with Ohio State. You don't trash-talk before the game starts. If you're going to brag, wait until after you've proven yourself. And I think that's exactly the problem that the media and the Democrats had. I'm no Donald Trump defender, not really a fan, not saying that, you know, there may not be some issues there with Donald Trump. Haven't seen any evidence of it so far, but, you know, we'll see in the future. But my point in all this is, you don't overplay your hand. You don't make something into a huge deal before you know that it's actually a huge deal. And so if the media had taken a more moderated stance to it, not had the giant countdown graphics and done essentially wall-to-wall coverage of the testimony in the 3 or 4 days leading up to it, then maybe they wouldn't look so foolish in finding out that James Comey didn't have a whole lot of new information to offer. But where their problem came in is they have made the biggest mistake that either a political prognosticator like myself or a scientist or anybody else can when doing analysis, and that is they made up a conclusion and then they tried to find evidence to back the conclusion as opposed to looking for evidence and then coming up with a conclusion. See, they've already determined in their own mind, Trump's going to be impeached, he's going to be out of office, it's just a matter of time and finding the way to do it. That's not the right approach to take. Maybe Trump will be impeached, I don't know, I can't predict the future. But if that happens, I need evidence to support it and then make that conclusion. You don't start with the conclusion and start trying to wirework evidence around your conclusion to make it all fit. That's not a winning strategy regardless of what kind of analysis you're doing. And they overplayed their hand. All right, 860-1440 if you want to get in on this. It's been a while since I've taken some calls. We got Joel at the tail end of the last hour, but I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on this and some of the other topics we've talked about. 860-1440 is the way to do that. We'll be right back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
John 13:34-35. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another.
Welcome back, everybody. Hour two of the Patriot Preacher is on. Glad to be with you on this Monday morning. Getting your week started, right? So, before we move on, I did want to mention we've got a couple things to talk about here. First of all, we've got the big grand reopening weekend for the Biscuits, which is going to be June 22nd at 7:05 on Thursday, and that will be continuing all weekend through the Saturday and Sunday games, which will be June 25th. So, that's going to be a big weekend. Looks like they've got the Human Cannonball going to be there.
Whoa.
Yeah. Heavyweight champ Deontay Wilder.
Whoa.
A block party featuring Curtis Blow. I'm used to Curtis Lowe, who's in the Leonard Skinner song, but I guess he's a different guy.
I mentioned that he was an early rap artist, maybe from the 80s, and he said, I don't like rap. I don't like rap that either, but I just somehow read about that. I don't really know who he is, but he's a big enough name that a lot of people do.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It doesn't matter whether I know him or not. If you know him and you want to go see him, you need to go see the Biscuits on Saturday.
I'm guessing. Don't know for sure. But I would think he would be family friendly. I don't think he'd be one of these rappers where
I don't think the Biscuits would invite him if he weren't.
No.
Especially since it looks like it's occurring on the same night as Family Faith Night, so probably, I imagine they wouldn't have him there if he weren't family friendly.
Christian rappers? They probably do.
Yeah, I would imagine they do.
Anyway.
They got Christian everything else. But, all right. Also, we have a sweet deal for you. $50 value to Yellowhammer Cafe, just $25, so you're saving half your money. And also, we have the Decades Rewind at the Impact on June 22nd. Both of those are sweet deals. You can grab those at newsradio1440.com today. So be sure to check those out. Now, with everything that was going on with James Comey kind of unpacking this, like I said, there was really just not that much new information in what we heard out of James Comey on Thursday. There was practically nothing that he said that was not already out in the public. The only things that really were eye-opening were that we got some insight into James Comey, his line of thinking, the reason that he did some of the things that he did. But as far as the actual facts of what's going on, there were virtually no new details. Not saying there wasn't anything new, but what was new was interesting, but certainly benign. Now, the one thing that a lot of people are talking about was the whole thing with Loretta Lynch and James Comey essentially saying that he believed, and I believe his assessment was correct, that Loretta Lynch had compromised herself and her objectivity when it came to Hillary Clinton. In other words, he believed that she was essentially batting for Hillary Clinton and that because of the meeting on the tarmac and because of the way that she had behaved and talked about Clinton, said, you can't even call the Clinton investigation an investigation. You have to call it a matter. And you certainly don't call it a criminal investigation. That Loretta Lynch had essentially compromised herself and that she should not be running the investigation into Hillary Clinton. And that's why he felt he had to kind of go it alone, which, by the way, is interesting. But let us keep in mind that the New York Times broke that story about 3 weeks ago. In fact, we covered it right here on the program. So, like I said, interesting information, not necessarily new information. This maybe just put a spotlight on it, but these were stories that were pretty much all the way out there. Very few new details came out. So Loretta Lynch being a snake and being in the bag for Hillary Clinton, at least in James Comey's eyes, that was already public information before this hearing ever started. Did get a little bit of insight into his mindset on the incident that was a topic of discussion at this particular testimony. And I think getting into James Comey's thought process does help us kind of unpack and understand why he did what he did when he was talking about that conversation that he had with Donald Trump where he said, I hope you can let Flynn go. Understanding his mentality in that, I think, does give us some valuable insight. Although one thing that was interesting is, and I pointed this out on Twitter, he memorialized the conversation by saying it was, quote, the nature of the person. In other words, what Comey was saying there is that because of who Donald Trump is, I thought it was important to write this down. Which, when it comes to Donald Trump, he has this record of embellishing and not being 100% accurate with his words and his facts. So that actually makes quite a bit of sense. If I were James Comey in James Comey's position, I probably would have done exactly the same thing. But a lot of people are upset about that because they say it proves that James Comey was biased against Trump. Well, I guess you could draw that conclusion because he didn't do the same memorandums when he had spoken with Barack Obama. Granted, he didn't do that often, or Loretta Lynch or other people within the White House. However, I think all this says is that James Comey was a little suspicious of Trump. He didn't trust the way that he spoke to people about conversations that he had. And so in a move to try to protect himself and his reputation as well as the FBI's reputation, he decided it would be best to have a record of those conversations for a later date, which, again, I think was a smart move.
And yeah, I do too.
And I think that he's proven that in this testimony, that this gave him some legitimacy when it's no longer, I mean, it is still he said, she said, but the point is it's he said, she said, and he wrote it down right afterward. So he's more apt to remember exactly what was said than the other guy. So that being said, I thought it was a smart move. What Trump said about hoping that he could let Flynn go, especially in the setting that he was in the Oval Office after he had asked the AG to leave, stupid mistake. don't know that you can draw criminal intent from that.
No, but you and I had, I guess off the air back when this, when we first knew that he said that, I think we were comparing it with a boss who, you know, someone, an employee is habitually late. And the boss finally says, you know, I'm hoping you could get here on
right.
time. You know, what it tells you, you know, you better get the, you know, I'm expecting you to.
Right. And that's the thing. Donald Trump, especially as someone who was a CEO, should have realized that that was not the appropriate way to handle that. Because he is president, he needs to understand, and again, I think that the vast majority of his problems come from a lack of Donald Trump's understanding of how government works. I think this is no exception to that. The FBI director is technically his subordinate, and I understand that. But at the same time, the FBI is also supposed to act as a watchdog organization on the entire government, including the office of the presidency. And so, unlike it is where you're the CEO and essentially what you say goes, that's not the way that public office, president, senator, whatever it may be, works. You can't just tell people to do things and then they do it. There are legal ramifications for those things. And there's a system and reason that that works. And because Trump doesn't seem to know much about it, James Comey even said in this testimony that he had reached out to Trump advisors asking him to tell them, hey, Mr. President, this is not the appropriate way to handle speaking to the FBI and other law enforcement agencies. So I'm really not detecting, or at least if it's there, it's not much, a hostility between James Comey towards Donald Trump. Now, I think he doesn't trust him, but that's different than saying I was just trying to undermine him. And so I think it's important to understand the difference there. Although one thing that I will say about this is that love Comey or hate him, with the way Donald Trump speaks and the reputation that he has for mischaracterizing things that people said, writing down a record of what was said does make a lot of sense. And what it also shows is that this is not something that he always did, which, by the way, it's previously been reported. So the media actually got it wrong. And I reported it, too, because it was in credible news sources. What they were saying is that this is a habit that James Comey had with virtually everyone. We found out in this testimony that actually was not the case. So, interestingly enough, the two big points that we have already brought to the attention of the American people through this testimony are that Loretta Lynch was a snake in the grass and that James Comey did not do this for every single person that he came in contact with, both of which do not help the Democrat cause one iota. And those were the biggest details that came out of this testimony. There are a couple others, and we'll be able to get into those in just a second when we return on The Patriot Preacher, 860-1440. I want to hear your phone calls, your opinions on all this.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Whoever is an avowed enemy of God, I scruple not to call him an enemy to his country. John Witherspoon, signer of the Declaration of Independence.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to call in. Give me your opinions on this. This is the last segment to do so because, of course, we got the Star Spangled Sermon at the top of the hour. So be sure to call in now if you want to get a chance to weigh in. Found out in this testimony, because we already talked about Loretta Lynch, we already talked about what was going on between James Comey and Donald Trump that night where he said, I hope you can let Flynn go. Talked about that a little bit. There were a few other details that I wanted to bring out that were mentioned, at least in this testimony. We did find out, and this was new information, that Comey had planned the release of that first memorandum. So when we found out about this memo that detailed what happened that night between Trump and Comey, it turns out that Comey actually did orchestrate that. It wasn't a third party. It wasn't somebody just concerned and released it. It actually was Comey that specifically asked his friend to release it to the press, which, by the way, perfectly legal, nothing wrong with it whatsoever. But it does take away from that narrative that this was just a concerned person and James Comey had nothing to do with its release. So there's a, which, by the way, Comey could have run with that story but chose to clear that up, and I have to commend him on that. So it does show that some of the early reporting was not 100% accurate, and that is good that we found out that. Also, what was interesting is that James Comey confirmed in the very first part of this testimony that Trump was never under investigation and that he did tell Trump that, because a lot of people are making a big deal out of Trump saying, hey, thanks for telling me three times that I wasn't under investigation. I appreciate that, in his termination letter. Well, it turns out Donald Trump was 100% accurate on that. I mean, you know, I'll be the first one to jump on Trump when he says things that aren't true, and I have in the past, but at least on this one, looks like Trump had it 100% right. And James Comey affirmed that, which I think does show something to Comey's character. This was not something in his questions per se. He brought this out in his opening statement, did not mind saying it, which I think does give Comey some credence when you're talking about the kind of person that he is. He just told the truth as he saw it, even though it may or may not help his case, which I've got to give him a commendation on. Another thing that he said, which is absolutely not new information, because anybody that's looked at this seriously would be able to tell you this. He said, with absolutely no qualifiers, and keep in mind this guy was the director of the FBI at the time, that Russia, and not just Russia, but specifically the Russian government, had every intention of hacking our election and did attempt to. However, he also affirmed that not a single vote was ever changed because of that attempt. So it was an attempt, but a failed attempt. So I appreciate him bringing that out because, again, that's what I've been saying since very early on when we got that information, is that, yes, Russia did try to hack our election, but they were not successful in that. They did not change any votes. Donald Trump is not president because the Russians tried to hack the election, succeeded, and gave him a whole bunch of votes that he wouldn't have had otherwise. James Comey confirmed that. But I did want to bring this up, and I thought that this was incredibly important to bring up because I want to give people props when they do a good job. Marco Rubio was, in my opinion, by far the best question and answer session of the entire testimony. He absolutely put the nail on the head, and he focused on the leaks, and he did his best to try to find where those leakers were through James Comey's testimony. Now, granted, I'm not sure that James Comey knows who those leakers are. I don't know that Rubio believed that or not, but the point is he asked the questions, he stayed focused, and he made a great point, which is that when dealing with Donald Trump, he never actually said, he never ordered him to drop the investigation on Flynn. It was more of a wishful thinking kind of thing, which, again, he shouldn't have said it that way. It was inappropriate to discuss that matter with the FBI director, regardless of the context around it. And I will say this about Marco Rubio's point. What he's saying is accurate, that Donald Trump never actually ordered him to drop the investigation on Flynn, and I don't think that there's nearly enough evidence to convict Trump on that through the legal process. However,
not beyond a reasonable doubt.
Not at all.
Criminal. See, that's the thing. There's a lot of doubt, even though I, like you, am no big Trump supporter.
Right.
But that's just not, and I think I know what he said, but that's not good enough.
Right. And this is the issue that we're going to run into, is that, was it a smart thing to say? No. May he have been trying to lead James Comey in that direction? Yes, but there's not enough evidence to convict him, and I don't think they're ever going to find it based on this alone. They may find it somewhere else in something we haven't seen yet, but they're certainly not going to find it here. And Marco Rubio did a great job of pointing that out, and I think another thing that Rubio brought up that should be commended is he was trying to find the leaks inside the FBI and questioning why James Comey did not do a better job of trying to seek out and find those leakers, which I think is 100% legitimate criticism of James Comey. And I've been, for the most part, a James Comey defender. But even I'm curious as to why those leakers were never found out. Why James Comey was not doing his job as the FBI director to find out who in the White House is leaking information to the press, especially confidential information. We actually had the identity of one of those people confirmed, and we may be able to get into that sometime later. But the point in all this is that was a completely legitimate criticism. Rubio was on the ball. The one qualifier that I would give to Rubio's point, which I agreed with, is that I would say to Rubio, yeah, I agree with what you're saying, and that Trump never actually said, I order you to drop the investigation on Michael Flynn. However, when it comes to these things, the FBI director ought not have to act as a coach to the president on how to address him. If you are the president, you should have enough interest in the office and the duties of your office that you learn the protocol for those things. And while it's good that James Comey did try to communicate with Trump through his advisors, telling him, hey, he needs to work on this and how he handles things, when you become president, you should take enough interest in that yourself as to learn how to handle a situation like that. And Donald Trump not only doesn't seem to know what he's doing in that area, he seems to not care that he doesn't know and has no intention of changing the way he does things. That is problematic. I don't mind someone being ignorant, but I do mind someone being willfully ignorant. I do mind someone not being willing to learn. So, again, it wasn't the smartest thing for Trump to do. I don't think that you're going to be able to convict him or that you're going to be able to impeach him based on those charges or this particular episode. But still, Donald Trump could tighten up the screws a little bit on how he deals with this. But this is one point that I wanted to bring out, and I think it's an important point to make. Let's just say, for the sake of argument, that all of the Democrats' wildest dreams come true, that in this testimony they had got absolutely everything that they wanted. Essentially, James Comey dropped some kind of massive bombshell that not only proved that he was being squeezed to drop the investigation on Flynn, but that Donald Trump was secretly a Russian spy and all the things that they would want to happen, and that Donald Trump actually got dismissed and was either impeached or resigned or however wound up Donald Trump not being in office. Let's pretend that that happened and follow that logic trail. Where would we end up? President Mike Pence. Now think about that. Donald Trump has been a Democrat for the vast majority of his life. And while he certainly is not what you would call a typical Democrat, and I'm not saying that he is anymore, obviously he ran as a Republican, but he has supported a $1 trillion stimulus plan, which was larger than President Obama's. He has been supporting mandatory maternity leave, which even President Obama didn't get through. He has openly expressed interest in a government-run, single-payer healthcare system. And when it comes to things like trade, he is a massive protectionist. When it comes to trade policy, dealing with other countries, that seems to be pretty much in line with the Democrat Party platform. And he seems to be pretty okay with keeping the budget around where it is and spending. Now, he may disagree on where it should be spent, but he agrees in big tax and spending centralized government. Mike Pence has none of those things.
So you would like a Mike Pence presidency? Well, I don't want to put word. I was going to ask you, how do you feel about a Mike Pence presidency?
Personally, I don't know that that would be great because not because I don't like Mike Pence, but because the implications of this country's already pretty divided and having Trump impeached, I don't know what that would do. But if you're looking at just the raw data, Mike Pence is a much better president than Donald Trump ever thought about being if you're a constitutional conservative.
Yeah, and fully. No matter what happens, if Trump is impeached, you're gonna piss off a third
exactly
of the people,
and that's
because these are the people who, as you know, as we've said, if he shoots five people and they witness it, they're still not going to be against him.
Right, and there is that constituency, and they're going to be ticked off that Pence is president and Trump is out, and again, that's really my only primary concern with this impeachment is I'm worried that it'll tear the country apart. We're already pretty divided. And I'm worried that that's going to get even more contentious if that happens. However, the Democrats are just not thinking this through because they have an opportunity to get a lot more of their agenda through with Donald Trump as president than they do with Mike Pence as president. their main problem with Trump isn't even necessarily on policy issues. They just don't like the way the guy talks and his rhetoric. They don't like the fact that he just shoots from the hip, that he'll offend people left and right and doesn't really seem to care much about it. They don't like Trump's style, but they don't disagree with a lot of his policies. Not saying that they don't have any policy disagreements with him, because obviously they do. But my point in all this is, what they're essentially doing is they're hoping for and moving towards a goal of ousting a man that is far more sympathetic to their causes than his vice president, the person who would be taking on his role if he were impeached. The Democrats are not thinking 15 seconds into the future, because as soon as they get rid of Trump, they have a much more conservative White House. And it'll be much harder to get the things that they want passed through if Mike Pence is holding that pen. So in other words, the truth is they're shooting themselves in the foot just because they personally dislike the guy.
Be careful what you wish for.
Exactly. Star Spangled Sermon is up next.
Hey, I'm not complaining because I really need to work. But this is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Hebrews 13:5-6. Make sure that your character is free from the love of money, being content with what you have. For he himself has said, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. So that we confidently say, the Lord is my helper, I will not be afraid. What will man do to me?
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. 860-1440 are the numbers. Wanted to mention this. We have some good friends over at Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. We want you to go by, check them out. If you have anything wrong with your car, I'm actually probably headed there as soon as the show's over. Got to get my oil changed, get everything fixed, get everything running right. And the only people I trust to service my truck is the good people at Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. They've been in business here 50 years, and there's a good reason for that. They know what they're doing. They know their customers. They know this community. And because of that, they have been blessed with a prosperous business, which is the way it's supposed to work. You do good by your customers. You do honest work, you treat people right, you get rewarded with, you know, some prosperity and some longevity. And they're a good example of that. So go by and check them out on the south side of Montgomery today on the Troy Highway. That's Jim Woodham Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. Be sure to check them out today. All right. So I think that this is appropriate, especially considering that today is the anniversary of the Orlando shooting. For those of you who may not remember the Pulse nightclub shooting, which took place a year ago on this day, was the biggest terrorist event since 9/11, with 50 people dying. Now, it took place in a gay bar, but, you know, people are still people. I may not have agreed with their lifestyle, but nobody deserves to have their life abruptly ended by a crazy person that way. And that kind of plays into the theme of the Star Spangled Sermon, and really the theme of the entire first hour, is you can disagree with someone vehemently and still respect their right as a person, as a child of God, believe that they are created in the Lord's image, and that even if you completely disagree with them, that you can still love them and show compassion towards them. In fact, that's going to be the subject of our Star Spangled Sermon today. You see, our society has a huge misconception about acceptance and love. You can accept someone, but if it's not coupled with love, all you're doing is embracing someone, even if they're on the wrong path. This is something that the Scripture understands well, something that Jesus himself espoused. Let's look at Matthew 7:12-14, a passage from the Sermon on the Mount. Very famous verse. In everything, therefore, treat people the same way you want them to treat you, for this is the law and the prophets. Enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way broad that leads to destruction, and there are many who enter through it. For the gate is small and the way is narrow that leads to life, and there are few that find it. See, Christ perfectly, and I don't think that it's a mistake that these two passages of Scripture are butted right up next to each other in the Sermon on the Mount. In the same breath that he issues the golden rule, treat others the way you want them to treat you. In that same breath, he also says the reason that you're supposed to do that is because there is a broad path to destruction that most people can wander down. So you need to walk the narrow path, following the golden rule, because there's not that many people that find it. And it's going to take work. It's not going to be easy because the path is narrow and it's not easy to find. But it's worth it because it's the right thing to do. So in the same breath, Jesus is condemning those who do not live by his precepts and also issuing a order of love and how to treat your neighbors and fellow man. See, what this all comes down to is it's a complete rejection of what the world claims love is. The world claims love means I tell people that I love them exactly the way they are, don't change, you just be whoever you want to be, live however you want to live, and you just go about your business that way, and I'm going to love you regardless. Well, Jesus still loves people regardless, but he loves people enough to encourage them to be a better version of themselves. He encourages them to say, hey, there's some things that you are not doing right, and I want to address those things. I want to help you with those things because I want to help you get better. He emphasizes that the way to salvation is singular and difficult to find. But the simple truth is he loves us too much to lie to us. Jesus Christ loves us too much to tell us that we're okay the way we are, to deceive us and to make us feel good while leading us down a path of destruction. See, that path to destruction is wide. Easy to find that one. Most people do, actually. He's saying that there's only a few, the people that follow me, that find that narrow way. He doesn't want us to be content with what we are. He wants us to always be striving to be more like him, to be better versions of ourselves, to restore the lost image that sin has tainted, that we can be more like him. You see, when somebody is sick, the compassionate thing to do is to be honest about their illness and to treat them in hopes that they're getting better. The world's view of love doesn't do that. It says you're fine the way you are, go about your business. Jesus is saying, no, you're sick. This could kill you. This is not good for you. So let's address that problem. He simply loves us too much to comfort us, walk quietly with us as we find the way to destruction. You can simultaneously love someone and tell them that they're wrong in an attempt to better themselves. Now, if you go around telling people that they're wrong just to get kicks out of it or whatever your reason may be, if that's not done with a sense of improvement, then you're also not following the teachings of Christ. Condemning people for no reason, telling them that they're bad people just to hear yourself talk, that's not following the teachings of Christ either. But telling them that they're right and the way they are now is okay is also not consistent with the teachings of the Scripture. You see, the truth is, the world's idea of what love is wrong. Not God's. God hasn't moved. He, as we understand from the Scripture, is the God of love. He is the arbiter of love. He's the inventor of love. He invented us specifically so that he could love us and that we could love him in return. That was the whole purpose for our creation. God is all about love. But part of love is being honest with people and telling them when they're engaged in something that is self-destructive, that is problematic for them, or is going to lead them down a dark path, saying to him, brother, because I love you, I want to tell you that there's something that you're not doing right. There's something that I want to help you with to improve yourself and to put you back on that right path. Because that right path is narrow. It's not easy to find. And if we're going to find it, we're going to need other people's help. Primarily Jesus Christ. And in most cases, we need help from our brothers and sisters as well. So let us follow the example of Christ and love people enough to be honest with them. Stay the course, friends. These are the days when you wish your bed was already made.
patriot preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.